Hello, welcome to episode 75 of Screen Heroes. I am Derek. I have my host with me, Ryan.
Hello. Is that for real?
And Ray.
Hi. Are we really episode 75?
We are. This is
if we were a person, really cool. We would be a senior citizen.
This is episode 75.
That's the real deal.
We were supposed to hit episode 75 before the 4th of July break, but we had a week that was off schedule. So, yeah.
It's all good.
This is it. This is the real deal. We are at episode 75. How's it feel, guys?
Old.
Feels old?
No, it feels great.
Okay, I was going to say, that hurts my feelings.
No, I love doing this. I want to keep doing this.
Well, good, because we've got episodes planned basically through the end of the year, so...
So you're stuck with us until then.
Right. At least until we get to episode 100, right?
So,
then we can just exit out and be like, yep, we did it, 100
triple
episodes.
Triple digits, baby.
Peace out.
Another fun thing. This is actually the premiere of season 4.
I guess it is.
Yes.
So, yeah, we're further along than The Flash is. It's pretty impressive.
How many more seasons do we have on the island? That's the real question.
Just one.
Well, I mean, with flashbacks, we could probably milk it a little bit.
That's true.
Should we stretch it out to more than the 5 years?
No,
then we can start doing your flashbacks, because we've gotten through mine after 5 years. Oh. So then we start with yours and Rachel flashbacks.
Right,
that's true.
We can combine those.
I don't know if you guys realize this, but we're almost to the point where we can start doing clip shows and have our Tuesday nights back.
That would not be
nights back for Derek, because he'd be the one having to do it.
I mean, let's put that aside for just a moment. What does a clip show of a podcast look like? Is it just like random clips of us?
It's just funny. It's like a sizzle reel there.
Radio shows do it all the time.
Yeah, come on.
Pen back. Sure.
Okay.
This is season 4. So welcome to season 4 of Screen Heroes.
Yes.
Yes, the worst season if we were Arrow.
Part of the Heroes Podcast Network. Hopefully this is our strongest season yet. Like Star Trek, The Next Generation.
That's what Mark Guggenheim thought too. Mark Guggenheim thought that at the beginning of season 4.
Come on, man.
So
I thought you were going to take that.
Check out his tweets.
We're like 90 seconds in and I was ignoring it. All right. Fine, let's talk news. What do you want to talk about?
All right, so Squirrel Girl was cast for the TV show New Warriors. And
she's the lead character in this.
Absolutely.
Show for whatever reason, but I'm good with it. I mean,
well, who are the other characters?
The thing is,
they're all unknown characters.
Yeah,
I guess she's
the
most well known.
Really part of the New Warriors for very long. She moved up pretty quickly because of how much like traction she got. So it's pretty incredible to see her kind of headline this, but there's also Speedball and Debris and Microbe. So, small cast.
They've all been cast.
Yeah.
Microbe, small cast. That's smart. Waka waka. I like a good dad joke.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So. It's a small cast. And Milana Vaintrub, I think that's how you pronounce it.
I'm glad you tried that, not me.
I did.
Better
I'm
you
so sorry
me.
If I butchered that, but she's been cast. If you do not recognize the name, but you know the face, it's because she's in the AT&T commercials. She's constantly on At Midnight, which is where I'm most familiar with her. She's a pretty funny comedian. She's been a model. I have a feeling she's going to do really well.
And she's now cast as Squirrel Girl, so she obviously gets like an extra 2 or 3 points in my book.
Absolutely.
Just immediately.
So I'm hoping that even if the show is bad, that the costume's good. Give us the costume now. I got the casting. I want to see what she's going to look
and
like.
The cool thing is Squirrel Girl has like 3 costumes,
yeah,
and I love every single one of them, to be honest.
Honestly,
so
the newest
pretty...
one is probably my least favorite. I
yeah.
like the classics, but I mean, it's still good. And it probably is the easiest to translate to real life. So
absolutely.
Let's do that.
Do you think she'll have a real tail or a CGI tail?
I bet there'll be a practical tail, but they'll probably CGI over it,
okay.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Give it trackers,
maybe mocap
something to track.
Tail.
Besides, she keeps that in her pants most of the time and make it look like she has a badonkadonk.
It's true.
Sure.
No, she does. It's
okay.
In the books.
That's okay. Fine. Okay.
Whatever. I'm very excited, though, and I'm hoping that if the show is good, or even if it's bad, and that she looks awesome in the Squirrel Girl costume, that she comes
right.
to Plant Con next
it's
year.
True.
Because... I'll
so you hear that, guys, over at PCC?
Yeah, get her.
All right.
Get Squirrel Girl.
That's right. We need the Squirrel Girl.
Okay, anything else in Marvel?
Yeah, Inhumans trailer premiere.
Yes.
Right.
Which Not excitement on the internet. They were not a fan.
It was lackluster.
There were things Lockjaw was
awesome.
Well, yeah, obviously, like Lockjaw. We've been talking ever since we started talking about Inhumans. I've made it very clear that I really only want to see Lockjaw.
It's a teleporting dog.
Giant dog.
Like,
as right? someone who doesn't know anything about the Inhumans other than their Marvel and the MCU's using them instead of the mutants, it didn't grab me. I had no idea what was going on.
Nope.
I had no idea who these characters were or why I should care about them.
Well, just that little clip kind of, you can tell they've already kind of really taken Black Bolt down a whole bunch of pegs because he's supposed to be like a master of fighting and like everything else. And he's been training his whole life to not make any noise or speak, but then the police officers can randomly beat him up and make him go, and it makes cars go everywhere, you know? So, I mean, they've obviously done weird things. Medusa's hair looks better, so I'm excited about that, because then the
poster
clips,
was bad.
Yeah, the poster wasn't... I'm really worried
about
it.
It's a little weird that the most exciting... the thing that people are most excited about was a dog.
That's not really that weird. I mean, people are most excited for
Groot
in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Have you been on the internet before? Like, do you understand how important animals are?
Dogs and cats are like the internet.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure.
The point I'm trying to make is that...
it's a show about six kind of like super-powered people and we're all focused on the dog.
Yeah, I mean, there's a
dog is super-powered too.
There's a moon base and they're advanced beings, but hey, there's a dog.
How many super-powered dogs are in the MCU right now? Derek?
Not
Here's
enough.
The thing. From that that trailer, he just looks like a dog.
A giant dog that can teleport.
But he looks like a dog. He doesn't look like he has any special abilities in the trailer.
Except that he teleports in the trailer.
By that logic, if you just saw that in a bubble like me who doesn't know the character, then everybody on Star Trek has the power to teleport.
Except they have to stand in a teleporter on Star Trek.
That's not my point.
Already.
It is twice. My point is the trailer was really boring and didn't tell anybody who doesn't know the characters anything about what's going on.
You're totally right.
That's all I'm saying.
We agreed with that at the beginning, but both of us are putting that blindly aside so we can watch a CGI dog.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm really good with it. He's giant. He looks super cuddly and he does that little play, you know, the little play mode.
Thing. It's adorable.
I loved it. I was in. I was instantly in.
All right. Lockjaw.
But Black Bolt, fix him. Please give him a mask and make him actually cool.
All right.
He can destroy planets just by like whispering.
Or make Mad Max your main character. I don't care. You got Ramsay Bolton there. Like, use him. He's a great actor.
Yeah. I mean,
fair enough.
They need to do something. We'll see.
Also in Marvel news, and I thought this was really cool. This is something I'm really excited about. What? Do you know?
No.
Oh, okay. Lucy Liu is directing the first episode of Luke Cage for season 2.
Yeah, I did see that.
Lucy Liu.
Yeah.
Like Charlie's Angels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Oren Ishii.
Yes.
She's directing the first episode of season 2.
Like Scout Oren Ishii, yeah.
I'm very excited about that. She's done directing work before. And I'm...
Is Elementary still going on? I never watched that show.
You know, in my gut, I feel like it ended at the end of this past season, but I don't know because I also never watched it. Had nothing to do with her. I just didn't need an American version of Sherlock while Sherlock was still a thing. So...
There was that really big Sherlock phase where the movies came out and then the BBC show and then the American show. Crazy.
That is exciting, though. I'm pretty stoked to see what happens with that. And
yes.
But I'm you know, all these shows coming up after Luke Cage and Iron Fist were a little disappointing for me, so I'm still nervous about both of those shows in the second season. Daredevil, I'm not as worried about. Jessica Jones, I'm not as worried about.
Well,
I love Luke Cage.
Defenders is next. They have a short, tight season. Yes, August is Defenders. November is Punisher.
Just keep Scott Buck away from all of them, please. He's the one that ruined Iron Fist. And what was the one with the serial killer, the TV show? It's,
Dexter.
He ruined the last season or two of Dexter also. So So.
Well, they were saying, I think it was the executive producer of The Punisher was saying that it's going to be completely different in tone from the other Netflix Marvel shows, and that was a weird thing to say because they're all different in tone.
I mean
season 2 of Daredevil was dark, right?
Sure,
but I mean Punisher is a dark character. There's very little light, so maybe they're going full
Spider-Man fell over.
They're going full darkness with the Punisher, which, you know.
Well, I thought it was a little weird to say because...
It is weird, but you're definitely right.
Like, Luke Cage is a very different tonally show from Daredevil, like it or not.
The
it
only
is
thing
different.
That those four shows have in common is the fact that they're a little dark.
And they're all in New York.
Some are more dark than others. Like, I would say Iron Fist is probably the lightest.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, yeah, totally.
But to be fair, it should be. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Based on comic books.
Absolutely. I just thought it was a weird thing to say, because it implies that the other shows were all really similar. So,
yeah.
I think that's about it for Marvel.
Anything else?
The only real DC news that's official news, there's some rumors swirling. The only official news is that Gotham by Gaslight is going to be the next animated movie, which will be the first Elseworld from DC to be adapted into a movie, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah, that should be interesting. I haven't read it, but I've seen a lot of the art from it. It's really cool.
I don't know if DC Animated knows that there are other characters besides Batman. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, we'll see.
On Reddit, there was a lot of that when somebody found the announcement or found it on the back of the DVD cover or whatever, for however they found it. But yeah... Batman is an established character. He's probably DC's most popular, if you know, not the most popular, top three. So, you know.
He's the most popular.
Yeah. He's had the most running series to bank on.
Would Red Sun have been cool? Sure, yeah. But Superman has a bunch of stuff, too. So, you know.
Batman is the easy bet, like Ray was saying. I mean, that's why in the comic book world, especially during the New 52, before Rebirth, like, there were almost a dozen different Batman series going on that had to do with some version of Batman or his family.
Well, if you're going to do an Elseworld story, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, that's going to be who you do it with. It's
Victorian
risk.
Era, which is really cool.
Yeah.
I'm a little nervous that they're already banking on the Batman-Harley relationship again in this one, for those who don't know, the new animated movie that's about to come out is called Batman and Harley Quinn.
Which is weird.
Even though Nightwing
They've
seems
been setting
more central.
Up Harley as a good guy for the last like 3 or 4 years, and I think now it's finally exploding between Injustice 2 and Batman and Harley.
Basically a good guy in Amanda Connor's series.
Yeah.
And even in the New 52.
Yeah,
I mean,
she teamed up with Wonder Woman and Power Girl.
Right.
Like legitimate team ups. Not.
And when she did bad stuff, it was usually to bad people.
Yeah.
Even when she was, you know, doing things that, you know, would be gray area. You know, she's more like Deadpool now than she is a bad guy.
I'm not a Harley fan. People that watch the show know that. But, like in Injustice, where she was working with the good guys, I liked her character a lot more.
Yeah.
I think that she makes a better, like, gray character than she does a villain.
I agree.
And I don't like her with the Joker nearly as much as I like her by herself.
I also agree with that. Yeah. I think she's transformed a lot in the last 7 years or so since the beginning of the New 52. And so I'm excited to see where that leads. I'm just a little nervous that, like Batman, they're just banking a lot on her right now. And she's a Batman character. So I kind of want them to expand a bit. Wonder Woman, her movie was incredibly successful. Why don't we maybe bank on her? You know, there's a lot that you can cover that people don't know.
So I'm actually hoping with the expansion of the Justice League that they do Identity Crisis.
That'd be cool.
And that leads to Infinite Crisis movies. Because both of those are a lot of fun. Yeah.
Like, animated?
Animated.
Oh, okay.
Animated.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do live action Infinite. Although they are, that's kind of where they were leading with The Flash. You know,
live action Identity Crisis would be tough to do with the characters that they haven't introduced, because there are so many secondary characters involved. Green Arrow, The Hawks, Zatanna, Elongated Man. Like, you have a lot to introduce. Throw those into the cartoons, though, and you can just do it with a little bit of exposition. People are a lot more forgiving of exposition in animation.
I mean, that was definitely true of the Justice League cartoon. I mean, in the last two seasons where it was titled Unlimited, how many characters just randomly show up for a scene or two?
Yeah.
You know? So that would be cool to see. I'd be excited for that. Anything else in the news?
No.
Somebody leaked what supposedly is happening at the panel for WB next weekend.
Okay.
So, the only stuff I really remember, they had a pretty detailed trailer description for another Justice League trailer that's supposed to be dropping, where they actually show Steppenwolf.
Okay.
And there's a lot of discussion about Superman.
Okay.
I don't remember where they said they showed him. And then supposedly Wonder Woman 2 is going to be confirmed with Patty Jenkins directing. which hasn't been confirmed yet, and they're going to try. Supposedly, they're trying to release that in 2019, but she wants to release it before Man of Steel 2 or after Man of Steel 2. So I'm assuming there's a tie-in there or something. But that's all I really remember from
if
the leak.
If that's the case, then that means potentially four DC movies in 2019.
That's too much.
I don't think... I mean, people who listen to the show, I don't think that three a year for the comic books, whether it's DC or Marvel, is a good idea. So I definitely don't think four is a good idea.
We'll see how it goes. I'm one of the rare people where I would go see one every single month. But I know I am in a minority.
No, I would too, but I don't. I would probably get burned out relatively quickly on it.
It's expensive.
If they were bad, especially.
Well, yeah, there's that. There's a quality issue to be aware of. Now, as far as Patty Jenkins goes, I mean, she was officially tasked to write the pitch with Geoff Johns. So we know that she's at a minimum involved in the basics. Of course, I'd like her to direct the sequel. So. I won't be surprised. There are some rumors swirling about when the second Wonder Woman would take place, and they're saying
80s.
The 80s with kind
that's
of
been
a
rumor since
era
the
thing.
Since the movie came
out. Yeah, it's blown up a bit like today. I mean,
unless
that's
we
fine,
get Wonder Woman
but...
like with like crazy hair and like big shoulder pads, I'm not gonna be in on that. Just kidding, I love 80s movies.
The part that I really don't like about the rumor is that they're talking about how Chris Pine will be back. And I don't feel like the characters were together enough to really have a lot of flashbacks that wouldn't just be scenes from the first movie.
Totally right.
So we don't... I mean, no offense to Chris Pine. He was a great Steve Trevor, but he did his job. And he did his job so well, we don't need him for the next movie. Yeah. And that's on purpose. So...
No.
But what's Wonder Woman without a love interest, right? We gotta have something.
She doesn't have a love interest in BVS, and she was still one of the better parts
of
the movie.
I was being sarcastic, obviously.
Yeah.
Now, anyway,
Jordan did want to mention in chat that Wonder Woman did beat Deadpool in the U.S. box office, which is a pretty big deal. Deadpool,
that Instagram post that Ryan Reynolds made was cute.
It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate the sense of humor that they have about things and, you know, kind of their outlook at how other movies perform is good for the industry. Mm-hmm. Just like how, was it Favreau? No, who's the Marvel guy that was talking about Wonder Woman's success making Captain Marvel an easier job for them?
Kevin Feige.
Feige, thank you. Yeah, it was Feige. Basically saying, look, Wonder Woman was successful. That means we don't have to answer all the same questions the Wonder Woman people had to answer, which is, can a female-led superhero movie be successful? Well, yes.
Obviously.
Now we can move on. And I appreciate that outlook because at the end of the day, it's a lot of the same people seeing these movies. So one success is usually good for the others.
Absolutely.
So... all right, well then let's move on to Spider-Man.
Yes.
Before we dive into spoilers, let's just do like a quick personal review of what you thought of it without going into spoilers, and then we'll warn people. So, okay. Ryan, what did you think of Spider-Man Homecoming?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. All right. Ray?
You almost made the same noise I did.
Wow,
I saw it.
You guys are killing me.
Top 10 Marvel movies?
All right. Well, I enjoyed it quite a bit. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought that it lives inside the MCU incredibly well. Of course, that's very much on purpose, and we'll get into details on that. I think it is the second best of the Spider-Man movies. I still think that Spider-Man 2 is better. I do. And I think that's as far as I want to go before we dive into spoilers.
Then spoilers.
All right. So you've been warned. If you haven't seen Spider-Man Homecoming, go ahead and hit the pause button and come back.
Or if you just don't care.
Yeah, stay here and chat with us.
All right. So let's run down the box office numbers real quick.
Your favorite part.
My favorite part. $175 million budget. It made $117 domestically in its opening weekend. That number has increased to almost $130 as of the Monday box office. If you bring in the international stuff, it has almost hit $270 so far in the first, you know, 5-6 days.
So, to be completely candid, this means that it was a mediocre showing for a Marvel film. It was a pretty good showing for a superhero film.
A pretty good showing for a Sony film.
A pretty good showing.
I don't have the Sony number. I should have pulled the Sony number, but that's a very good point.
But yeah, when you compare it to the other Marvels, like it says on here, it came in seventh, and that is the halfway point since it's
at
16 now.
Yeah, it pushed Thor the Dark World out of the top 10.
It's fine.
For Marvel openings.
Yeah.
It is the second highest Spider-Man opening ever, going in just behind Spider-Man 3, because, of course, Spider-Man 3 had the Spider-Man 2 push.
Right.
And Venom. And everybody wanted to see Venom.
I guess everybody wanted to see Venom.
I remember that very, very well.
Yeah. We're not going to talk about Spider-Man 3. Anyway, only three Spider-Man, there's six Spider-Man movies, right?
Yes.
Only three of them had cracked 100 million opening weekend. So Spider-Man 3, Spider-Man Homecoming, and the original Spider-Man.
Right.
So, you know, it's in good company for the most part.
I think what we're saying is the jerk-offs from our Civil War showing who sat behind us and yelled so loud I could have sworn I was deaf.
And you yelled at him.
I did yell at him. I threatened to hit one with my shoe.
That's okay. There was a guy with a phone in our showing that I wanted to throw something at.
I couldn't see him behind Ray, so it didn't bother me. I'm sorry.
My giant head blocked him from you.
Your hair is poofy sometimes.
That's what it was. Good save.
But yeah, so 13th best, quote, superhero opening ever. Narrowly beating out Man of Steel.
That's,
you know,
not saying a lot, guys.
I like Man of Steel.
I mean,
Man of Steel made 116.6.
My point is, like, this is just, it's a mediocre film compared to what we got. Like,
from a financial perspective, it wasn't as ground shattering as I anticipated.
The hype for Spider-Man was so real at Civil War, and it's like all that dropped off for Homecoming.
I think we're not the majority. There was still a lot of people there's more people out there that share Derek's opinion than share our opinion about the movie. Just like being on Reddit and I tend to watch movie reviews from some people that I trust, and almost all of them unanimously loved it. And it's very well reviewed on Rotten Tomatoes and some
That's
of the other
true.
Metacritic.
So far, every superhero film this year has gotten above 90%. And Thor Ragnarok is projected above that on Rotten Tomatoes. It's pretty incredible.
With their director, yeah, it could be really good.
Oh, that we didn't mention the great title that Thor Ragnarok is getting in Japan.
The Mighty Thor Battle Royale.
Yeah, that's so, I want a poster with that on it. That's such a great title.
Anyway.
But if you look at the superhero movies this year, I mean, between, you had Logan, of course, you had Guardians 2, you had Wonder Woman, and you've had Spider-Man Homecoming. I definitely think Spider-Man's better than Guardians 2.
It is.
I do. I personally do, you know. From a technical perspective, they're probably a little bit closer. But
sure.
I do think that both Logan and Wonder Woman were better movies.
Yes.
Pretty much across the board. I think
we still haven't spoiled anything, just FYI.
I guess we haven't. Yeah, we haven't.
Way too early.
Way too early.
I guess.
I think my biggest problem, if we want to just dive into it, my biggest problem with Spider-Man Homecoming.
Talk about the good things first.
Okay, then let's do it. Good things.
In case Tom Holland is watching.
Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
Of course, though. You have to know that going in, because it's Michael Keaton. Said a word. It's Michael Keaton, okay?
My favorite thing so far about the Spider-Man films as a whole majority has been the villains. Willem Dafoe and Alfred Molina.
Yeah.
And
Doc Ock.
I know it was a bad movie, but Thomas Hayden Church.
But Sandman was really good.
That's true.
Is sadly a really incredible character is lost in a really stupid movie.
You almost did it. It's going around.
And then Michael Keaton. Man, he was good. He was scary.
He wasn't just scary. Like, all right, so now we're definitely going into the spoilers.
Let's
here.
Let's do this.
When when little Peter goes up to Laura's house and knocks on the door. Now,
and it's Liz, not Laura.
Sorry, Laura's her actual name. I just looked down at the paper. Now, I actually expected him to be behind that door, but not for the reason he was. I thought he had figured out who Peter was and, like, was basically kidnapping his girlfriend kind of trope. And, man, was I glad that they went the direction they did, because that was such a good, like, two scenes, give or take. You know, the one in the house and the one in the car on the way at the dance. Just so fantastic. He's creepy, but he's steady, and he's just intense. But at the same time, like, you never know, is he going to just snap at that very next second, or is he going to play it cool the whole time?
Right.
I love that.
I think, for me, I mean, obviously, Michael Keaton, I was sold already going in, just like I was with Ego in Guardians 2, but...
Right.
He was better than Ego.
Only because he was better written, not because of the actor. Kurt Russell's awesome. I would
agree with that. So, but contrary to what you said, I think that my favorite part of the villain was the way he was written as a, like, working guy that's just trying to keep his family afloat and, you know, have a good life for his daughter and his wife. I thought that is what made him scary because, you know, if you're a family man that, you know, there's been a lot of movies about a family man that was trying to do something for his family and did a lot. I mean, Taken, well, the entire series is about that.
Hinted at something that's so, you know, just unspoken, I guess, about Tony Stark is that in the comics, he's a huge war profiteer. He made money off of the whole Civil War with Cap in the comics, and he profited from Cap's death even. So the fact that Tony is also making money off of the cleanup after all these is such a, like...
I love that. That line.
It's so good.
Plus, they introduced
so
damage
awesome.
Control in this, which is interesting, because I thought they were going to do a TV show about damage
they
control.
Were.
They
were.
Okay, so it wasn't just me. I thought I had heard that,
no,
too.
But they hadn't actually been introduced in the MCU yet, I don't think.
Well, I don't think they had really thought about the repercussions of having Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Damage Control on at the same time, considering in the first season, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. really did just go ahead and clean up after. And
I think, yeah, was it first season? I know when the second Thor movie came out, there was like a whole episode about cleanup.
Yeah, that was
from
the beginning.
That,
that was early,
like,
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Episode 4, I think.
Was it really?
It was the first half of the first season. I can't remember the episode.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely fairly early in the season's run. But yeah, but there was no Damage Control, name in there.
But I love that line, though. You know, basically that, and I'm paraphrasing, that the people causing all the damage then get paid to clean it up.
Yep.
Is very poignant, not just to the MCU, but to the way our actual world works. And that just really hit home for me, and I like the idea that he's not just a bad guy to be a bad guy, because a bad guy who's just being a bad guy
is Loki.
I mean, maybe Loki, I think, just wants to have some fun, but I mean, just like a generic villain who's just
he's
being...
just a Cyndi Lauper character,
exactly.
That's all.
Yeah,
I could buy that,
but you know, I like the idea that he's doing this because he feels vindicated. He feels like he has a right to do it because he was an honest man. He was trying to do an honest job and make some money the American way and got completely screwed by these super rich, powerful people that were causing the destruction anyway. I thought that was just a really nice motivation.
Well, and even in his villainy, he was still... I mean, yes, he was scary, and he vaporized the dude for, you know...
By accident.
I loved that.
Yeah, that was great. But he, when he, like, his dealings with Spider-Man, you know, Spider-Man saved his daughter, and he let him go, you know, and didn't do anything when he could have just ended him.
Yeah.
You know, and even at the end, you know, in the post-credits scene, he doesn't spill the beans.
Now, I want to talk about that, because I think there's two possibilities. Either one, it's exactly what you're thinking, and he's giving Peter a pass because he saved his life. Or is it because he wants to take care of Peter Parker?
I think it's giving him a pass because it saved his life, because he's already been proven that has some value, and he has some moral compass in this hour and a half long movie. He already had established that.
I honestly feel like it's a mixture of both.
It might be.
Because he seriously doesn't know what he's going to do when he gets out.
Maybe that's what makes him crack and go full villain.
Maybe.
Because, I mean, he was a villain, don't get me wrong.
No, he totally was.
He had his reasons for doing what he did, and they were decent reasons.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I completely agree. How'd you guys like Tom Holland in his first round by himself?
He was fine.
He's the best Peter Parker that we've had in the live universe, I think, personally for me. I think, well,
Peter
I should
Parker,
say,
absolutely.
He was the most accurate to the comic books. I think that either the other two actors were missing one large component of the character.
For my take, like, even in 2001 when Spider-Man came out.
Isn't that long ago?
Yeah. Watching Tobey Maguire, I was like, you're 45. Why are you in high school? Stop it. And, you know, for Andrew Garfield, I was like, no, you're too pretty. You ride around on a skateboard. Yeah. Nobody is beating you up. Like,
yeah, that wasn't believable.
But the fact that, like, jerk kid kept picking on Flash Thompson kept picking on Tom Holland, I was like, yeah, that totally makes sense. Like,
they did kind of miss a large component. I mean, so the problem with Tobey Maguire's was that he didn't do any kind of quipping. There was no kind of clever, like, you know, back talk to the guys. But he did everything else right. Where Andrew Garfield, he did some of the quipping, but he was too cool to be Peter Parker,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And then, but this one, they got those two aspects right, but then they kind of missed the fact that he's kind of a hyper-intelligent dude, too. But Tony Stark is giving him all his tech and everything, and his best friend is the one hacking the suit. What does he do that shows he's a smart guy the whole movie?
Nothing.
Very little. The rest of the trivia team really wants him.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that they hit that's on that on, like, so many times. Like, that's the point, right? Is they didn't have anything for him to do, but they had to keep reminding us that he belongs at that super intelligent tech school. Yeah, I mean, I thought he was fine.
Also, he had no spider sense. What the heck, guys? Where's the spider sense?
Love the spider sense.
Yeah, but there wasn't any in this movie. There was zero spider sense.
Well, so I guess here's my
question. No tingling.
Here's my question. Because when he's not in the suit, you know, and the suit, is, of course, is super advanced technology by Tony Stark with its own AI and all that kind of stuff. What about him? What changed when he got bit by the spider?
He got super ripped, like Tobey Maguire.
Right? Yeah. He's really in good shape. Yeah. That's all it is. Because, I mean, I've been bit by a spider recently. That didn't happen.
It might still be in the process. Sometimes it takes a little bit to kick in.
Okay.
I mean, he got some. He can do flips and stuff now.
Yeah.
But did he do any of that out of the suit?
Yes.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. And he climbed on the walls out of the suit, too.
Yeah.
He did?
He did.
Pretty sure. I know for a fact he did some, like, gymnastics. Like, when he's running through a school or something because he was late to class, he did, like, a flip over a guardrail.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I know for sure that that happened.
He did jump over the fence when he was leaving school early.
Yeah.
He did do that, I guess. I think they focus so much on the tech behind the suit and so little on him.
Which is all Iron Man. That's right. That's the thing. Yeah. In Andrew Garfield's, he made the web shooters. You know,
I actually feel like if you had removed Iron Man completely, it would have made it a stronger story. You know?
Yeah, it depends on which route they went with it. But yeah,
absolutely. They could have easily rewritten that in about a day and a half, gotten him out of the film, and made him kind of rest on his own laurels, and he would have to build that up.
Yeah. I mean, I guess he didn't get his web shooters on his old suit from Tony Stark.
Like, no,
he built those, and they were bigger and, like, clunkier.
Sure.
But, so, I mean, I guess with that, he had something, but, I mean, I don't know. There was just few and far between. It was like, without Tony Stark, what is he?
Sure.
Yeah.
So,
Well, I guess so. We're starting the borderline on critical territory. As far as positive stuff goes, I liked that the opening had the old school Spider-Man theme song.
I did not like that.
You didn't. As soon as that came on, I was really happy about it.
I smiled. I couldn't help it.
Let's do the original theme song, but in a different octave. It's like the common thing right now. Jurassic Park and you know, all these other movies.
Yeah.
Hey, Jurassic Park slowed it down too.
Sorry.
Okay. Like, come on. Come on.
Like, can we get some originality, guys? I mean, they've got... Marvel doesn't have any good themes in any of their movies right now, really.
They don't.
I think that's why they use the one theme that people recognize.
Here's something that, like, I was in. I was so in. They hooked me. And then they dropped the ball. And that was the soundtrack. You started playing Spoon's Underdog, and then you took out the words. When it fits so well with him.
And that costs extra.
Then you played the Ramones. And I was like, man, is this going to have a really good soundtrack like Guardians? No. No. John Watts was like, two songs. Only two.
Just a little taste.
Not evil enough. I was upset. Like, I get so upset that there's all these, like, epic, forgettable music.
In all
the Marvel movies. There's nothing. Guardians comes out with these, like, amazing soundtracks.
And
nobody else
can
do it.
Yeah, I think part of it is James Gunn, because he basically puts together those soundtracks.
He has them in mind when he's shooting scenes, he said. He's got all the songs planned out ahead of time with the storyboard and
pretty
everything.
Incredible.
And even so, Guardians 2 soundtrack definitely didn't have the spark that the first one had.
That's true.
But, I mean, even
Bruce
going back...
Reed goes a long way, I mean...
Right?
Yeah. Going back to, you know, kind of the Spider-Man theme song, though, I mean... you say that like you want some originality, but a lot of people were really upset when Man of Steel didn't use John Williams' score for Superman.
Well, there's going to be a lot of people upset either way. So
that's
true. I mean, you're right.
You're not going to please everybody.
But if you're not going to use a very iconic score, because there aren't a lot of characters that have their own iconic score. Superman and Spider-Man are the big two. Batman.
Danny Elfman stuff from the original movie.
The 1960s one is more iconic, to be honest.
I think more people know
to pick that out. But
my point is, though, there aren't a lot, right? We can count on one hand how many superheroes have a very recognizable theme song.
True.
So if you're going to replace one of those, you better replace it with something good. And
that's what I wanted to happen.
Yeah, but my point is, though, is that there's some risk there. With Man of Steel, people were not happy.
You don't think everybody would have reviewed the movie as well if it had a different soundtrack?
I'm not saying that at all, but I think a lot of people liked it. I think a lot of people liked, just like I liked it, having that little throwback to something that is recognizable. I mean, let's face it. The only reason this movie was made the way it was is because Spider-Man is so recognizable throughout the world. He is Marvel's like number one brand.
Yeah.
And that's why Sony and Marvel were able to come up with a deal to make this movie. Otherwise, it wouldn't have happened.
So we talked a lot about news. We probably went over our news, and we got to move on. We only have 20 minutes left to hit
on
everything.
Yeah, we're good.
All right, well, let's dive then into the critical.
All right, so I'm just going to get this over with. It's so disappointing to me that the women had no role in this. Like, they are so useless. You could have swapped them out. Like, everything Aunt May said could have been said by Happy or Iron Man, given what it was. Nothing out of her mouth was at all important. And then anything that Liz said could have been said by any other character. So they just weren't important to the story. And that's frustrating because as cool as Spider-Man is as a franchise, he has some pretty spectacular women in his life, and Aunt May has always, in every iteration, been really dynamic and important, and she's just not here, so that sucks to see.
Even Robin, I mean, MJ, had nothing
We're
to do.
Not going to talk about that.
By the way, that's not the definition of a twist. Okay, when your character named Michelle in a Spider-Man movie...
I don't
movie,
think that was supposed to be a twist.
A lot of articles out there are claiming it's a twist.
Should not be taken seriously for any movie news.
Yeah, that is as lame as the Robin thing in The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, I totally agree.
I'm totally fine if you don't want to use Mary Jane or Gwen Stacy as your
love
interest.
Yeah, you don't need to throw MJ in there as a stupid freak. Come on. All the guys that are just like casual Spider-Man fans like, I know who MJ is! I get it, guys, I get it!
Well, that's why...
In the next film, she's going to be Spider-Gwen, and everybody will lose their effing mind, because she's MJ and Spider-Gwen, and
she's going to take over all the female roles.
Her name's not Mary Jane, it's Michelle, I don't even know. But, like, that's just so
frustrating. Michelle Jones, sorry.
That's so frustrating. You know, it's the same thing with The Dark Knight Rises. We can't say that his name is Dick Grayson. People won't know necessarily what that means, so we'll just call him Robin.
So, but realistically, what is the point of that character even in the movie? Like, I did not like her character. What is she just there to... What does she even do?
Weird.
She just makes snarky comments?
Yeah.
Okay, that's great.
Right.
Like, what? Take her out,
but
and
that's
it's the
just
exact
it.
Same
like,
movie.
Ned and Flash also made snarky comments.
But Ned at least like helped him hack the suit.
Yeah,
and Flash,
they served
kind of
purposes
like,
to the
yeah,
story.
Yeah, Flash was an antagonist.
Yeah,
you know that was his own age, which was important. But no, but I mean Ray's totally right that Michelle. Like at first, I thought Michelle's character was there simply to create tension in the love triangle kind of thing, because that's a trope.
I thought she was going to be the love interest. I thought it was going to turn out to be one of those 80s tropes where, like, the guy has a crush on the hot chick the whole time, and then he remembers that the frizzy-haired ugly duckling is his true love. Like,
that's never happened. I don't remember that.
That's fair. But instead, we got neither of those things.
Right?
And she just made sarcasm. And don't get me wrong, she was funny. She delivered her lines well. But she served no real purpose.
No.
And Liz served no real purpose other than to be that engine. You had to have a love interest that had to connect to the Vulture, otherwise the story doesn't work that way. And you have to rewrite the story. So that's why she's there. Who she is, what she does, what she says is totally irrelevant.
Yeah.
I agree. That's the same thing I just said. So yeah.
Yeah, it's very frustrating.
Okay.
Did you have something else you wanted to say?
No,
about that?
Let's just move on from women are useless.
A huge problem for me was the fact that they really tried to do, like, a Breakfast Club type, you know, 80s kind of school feel, and it did not work, in my opinion. Maybe you guys disagree. That did not work. I didn't get the same feeling I got from The Breakfast Club or, like, any of those, you know,
iconic movies. Is it just me, or have directors forgotten how to direct young adults?
Maybe that's what it is.
Just call someone from the Disney Channel. It's the same company now.
Yeah.
So, I was just thinking about this the other day. I was like, man, where are all those really cool, like, kid movies? Like, we had, you know, Rookie of the Year and, like, all these, like, fun little movies, the Mighty Ducks and stuff, of kids being heroes. And they're just normal kids. Sometimes they're athletes and sometimes they're really hyper-intelligent. And it's all cool. But there's none of that anymore, and I don't know if directors even know how to work with kids.
I think the problem is that it's a kids, it's a kid-centric movie in an adult-centric universe. Because the MCU, everybody else is an adult. All of those other characters are in their 30s, some are in their 40s. You know, he's the youngest by, like, 20 years.
Yeah.
And I think that creates a bit of a storytelling problem, because even in, like, Marvel Comics, he's not that young. Most of the time.
He's pretty young in a lot of the stories. I mean,
I thought he's been older recently.
He has recently, yeah, but recently isn't his, like, entire run of comics.
He's about 35.
But that's how they're telling the stories now, though, are with all of these characters being kind of in that same age range. And so that's how the MCU is, too. It's different. The stories are different, but the tones are similar.
I really wanted to go with an established Spider-Man.
Well, they did. They didn't retell the origin story.
Thank you. I do not need to see Uncle Ben die one more time.
Right.
Poor Uncle Ben didn't even get cast in this one.
I'm good with that.
So,
like, when you look at The Breakfast Club and what made it successful, every single one of those characters was there for an actual reason, and they all had their own story, and they were there to work with each other to complete a story for each of the characters. They all helped with each other's story.
Yeah.
In this movie, literally, like we said, the girls didn't do anything. They were completely useless. So when you're trying to do a vibe from a movie that did characterization so well,
yeah,
from a director that was great at very characters. Intimate characterization, not in the traditional sense of intimate, but you know what I mean,
yes.
Close to the character, you know, it was a huge failure in that respect for me, and it really bothered me the whole movie. A lot of people wrote the reviews and loved that about it. It did not hit those notes for me at all. So, and I'm kind of glad that you guys felt similar, because
you're totally right. I don't think people understand how to take tropes and expand on them. Every single one of John Hughes' films starts out with a trope, with a cliche, and then just in the beginning he expands. He's like, you can be a trope, you can be a cliche to somebody. I'm sure I'm a huge cliche to hundreds of people that only see my face, but when you get to know me, I have many facets. And
yeah,
that's what John Hughes did. And John Watts did not do that. These people were their tropes from beginning to end, no characterization.
And if they had literally just done, like, Modern Breakfast Club with Spider-Man, I think it would have been more, like, if he had just focused on the characters and had the fact that he's Spider-Man been, like, a secondary thing, no Tony Stark, that would have been probably a lot better, you know?
Would have been very interesting.
I mean, everybody pays to go see Spider-Man, and I get that. But, I mean,
it doesn't necessarily make a good story.
You noticed something.
Yeah.
And we talked about it.
We did. This is my biggest gripe for the movie. Now, there's a second gripe that comes in really close to it, but this is my biggest gripe. And it's that everything significant that's bad that happens in the movie is 100% Spider-Man's fault. And if he just stays home in his room, none of that stuff happens at all.
The weapons still hit the street, but there's no giant...
They don't go after the airplane because
Michael
Keaton thought it was an insane idea and he was never going to do it because he didn't need to.
Delmars doesn't get blown up.
The Washington Monument doesn't start to crumble because there's no bomb in Ned's backpack. basically anything that happens, every fight, every action sequence, everything that gets ratcheted up from the quote normal crimes that take place are all his fault.
But I think that's probably part of the point of the movie, because the whole thing is that Tony Stark is trying to make him realize that, you know, being a hero has its costs, right? And by the end of the movie, he's trying to fix his own mess, and that's the whole thing. And his ultimate goal is to get the weapons off the street and do the right thing, but he has to also fix his own mess to do that. So I think that was somewhat covered. I agree.
I get that. I get that that's what they were trying to do, but literally every bad thing that happened was his fault.
If that's what they were trying to do, then I really feel like they should have brought it home with something a little more tragic, to be honest, because comic book writers for years have said that the biggest Spider-Man villain out there is the universe. The universe hates Peter Parker and will forever, like, crap on him. And Peter Parker's bright, happy attitude is what pushes him to do better in the world. And so if that is what they were going for, like you say, I think they should have taken it a little further. Like, maybe Ned should have died, because the character they ripped off in the comics, like, Ned in the comics dies. So maybe...
Yeah, I mean, they're, like, not going to kill off a kid in a Marvel movie.
No, I know. But
here's the thing. If that's really what they were trying to do, and that, like, that just, all that does is make Tony so irresponsible. It might be...
But we know he's irresponsible. That's been established.
This might be the most irresponsible thing he's done in the entire universe.
Other than create Ultron and destroy an entire country or city or whatever it was.
Sokovia.
Except the difference is, though, that with Ultron... Right, he didn't know that that's what was going to happen. Versus with Spider-Man, he knew that he wasn't ready. He knew that he was going to make these mistakes and put people in danger, and it still gave him the second most technologically advanced suit on the planet.
I don't think that's true. How did he know he was going to be doing all
this? Because the whole speech that he gives after the fairy sequence is all about how I knew you weren't ready and yada yada yada, and give me the suit back, and, you know, can't you be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, and, you know, no, we're not going to call you up to the Avengers, because he knew he wasn't ready.
I think a lot of people have that protocol. Right? But I think a lot of people in real life have a similar problem.
But the difference is, though, that this is the Iron Man who's supposed to have been now the experienced Avenger, right? He's been doing this for 10 years.
Yeah, Cap has been doing it for 90 years.
He was asleep for a lot of those. But the thing is that Iron Man, Tony, has made more mistakes to learn from than Cap has.
That's absolutely true.
Right? Yeah. So, but that's the...
Because Cap isn't full of himself and...
Well, he is sometimes. When Bucky's involved.
Yeah.
But the point is, though, is that Tony is the guy who is the mistake guy. Yeah. That's who he is. And he's supposed to have learned from a lot of these mistakes and grown as a person. That's what they try and show in each movie, is that he's growing as a person. That's why he had PTSD.
But then he doesn't
Iron
grow.
Man 3.
No, he doesn't. He reverts back.
That's
pretty
Tony.
Fast.
No, but my point is that that doesn't work for me.
His redemption at the end of the films is completely negated by his actions in the next film, and that sucks.
It's like Magneto in the X-Men movies, right? He's going to be a good guy, then he's going to be a bad guy, and then he's going to be a good guy again, right? Tony is whatever he needs to be to fit the plot point that the movie wants to set.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I wouldn't argue that.
And that's lazy.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with that at all. I'm just saying I think that they had a kind of an in-universe explanation of what they were trying to do. They just didn't execute it very well. Can we talk about the third act and how bad it was, right? We're going to talk about that. It had a similar problem to Wonder Woman, where the finale was less than exciting and just not great. And then...
Well, that was because of Aries.
Well, hang on. Where are you starting?
I mean, really, for me, it got really bad, like... The fight with Vulture was all right. But then when you start to getting the wrap-up of the movie, and he goes
you mean the plane sequence?
Kind of the end of the plane sequence, and even, like...
Because I have a major problem with the plane sequence.
There's some problems with the plane sequence. What's your problem with the plane sequence?
So, this plane is moving dozens of arc reactors, a prototype of Cap Shield, some special belt of Thor's that's magic. Who knows? At least an Iron Man helmet, probably a whole suit. Obviously, very expensive, very high-tech and dangerous equipment and weapons from the Avengers. And there is not one human being or robot on board that plane. Not one Avenger. Falcon, Vision, Scarlet Witch, Iron Man himself, Cap. None of these, or I guess not Cap, he's a little busy. But you know my point.
Falcon, so is the entire team
but,
Cap.
And, yeah, okay. There are people, okay, Black Widow's around, Tony's around.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure Rhodey can sit on an airplane at this point, and I mean... He's a pilot. He can fly it, right? Or, I don't know, maybe hire some security from somebody because you have security.
Or he has, like,
people.
This whole suit drone army.
Or his entire freaking suit drone army. Not one person actually has eyes on this plane. Not even a camera. There's not even a camera that Tony's watching. No, nothing.
Yeah. Classic Tony, though, right?
But that's just, I mean, you would put a camera on almost...
I have a camera at my house that watches my front door, right? And there's like $5,000 worth of stuff in the house. So like, you know, this is millions, billions of dollars worth of equipment.
They were already stressed about it. Happy was stressed about it. And nobody thought to throw a camera on the plane.
Right.
They had this high-tech cloaking device, but not a camera.
That's a fair... I mean, that's absolutely fair. I thought that, yeah, that there was some lazy writing going on with that. Really, my biggest problem with the third act is after that fight, after everything happens...
All you needed was two throwaway pilots who were flying
okay.
the plane.
Okay, we got it, Derek.
I'm just saying.
So, he gets invited to the Avengers hideout, whatever...
The ranch?
Yeah, the ranch. I guess it's not a hideout because all the reporters are there, right?
And
he gets offered. The entire movie is about Spider-Man wanting
joining
to join the
Avengers. Yes.
And for no reason at all, he's like, nah, I'm good.
That is so not in character.
Ignore this awesome suit.
They gave him the meme. They actually said, walk through this door and you're an Avenger, and he didn't do it.
But there was literally, like, that wasn't character development. That wasn't, there was nothing that in the entire movie that would...
That hinted to him doing that.
Yeah, but why
but
did
again,
he do it?
It's execution, because it was supposed to be that he now understands he's not ready. That's what it was supposed to be. But again, they didn't execute it well. So, yeah, they have this big reveal. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I knew that that syringical, like that round wall.
Syringical?
The wall.
Cylindrical.
Cylindrical? He actually, like, injects suits in the nanobots in the Spider-Man, so he has a suit in his blood.
Cylindrical.
The rounded wall was absolutely going to have another suit.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, you know that Tony's been practicing this. Like, when we get this new Avenger, I'm going to build this wall, right? And it's going to have a suit thing. And I just hope they're human-sized, because if it's too big, if it's Hulk... We're going to have an issue.
If they're like an amorphous blob,
I don't
know what to do.
If it's a dog that teleports, we're going to have major problems.
It's like, a woman with a giant ass tail.
Yeah, like, I mean, come on. But, yeah, obviously it's going to be a suit. But he built this one room with a press junket outside just so that he could have this moment.
Look, they've added a lot of people to the team, and they just lost half the team, so he knows he's going to be recruiting. He wants to give them an A-plus VIP treatment.
Apparently. He's got way too much money. He's established that already.
So for someone like me that has extreme social anxiety, giving me a pretty costume and telling me to talk in front of, like, hundreds of people would not have been a good idea.
But he gets to put on the
sweet
costume.
I would have backed out, too.
What if you were wearing the mask? It's
fine. That's true. It makes it better. No. We all do cosplay. I feel a lot more confident
in that. You could have had Karen or whatever he named the AI talk for you.
You know what's funny about that? Fun fact, the woman that voiced that AI is married to the actor that plays Vision.
Paul Bettany?
Bettany.
Bettany, yeah. Excuse me.
Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah, Jennifer Connelly voiced.
Oh, that was
and they're married
Sarah.
In real life.
I knew
so
that.
His voice
that
is
familiar.
If they ever went the route of the like android love interest like Vision has in the comics, she could voice that and they already have the chemistry.
Yeah, because they're married.
You know? That's freaking adorable.
And remember, Jennifer Connelly played Betty Ross
in the Bad Hulk movie.
Yes. So
well, now
she
that's
has
one
of
my favorite
of
things about
connections.
The movie now all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's really cute actually.
Now Gwyneth Paltrow shows up at the end for 5 seconds.
I guess they're back together, who cares?
I mean, I guess they're back together and I guess he proposed because Happy's been carrying a ring for 10 years. Or something.
Yeah, I did like that Happy was back because Jon Favreau is a great actor and he was an adequate director. He did great on the first Iron Man, Iron Man 2.
So,
maybe
do
not
you know
fault,
why
but.
That Jon Favreau cast Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper in the first movie?
Nah.
It's because in the comics, Happy and Pepper marry and he thought that he was going to get to be a part of it and do that.
That's adorable.
He thought he was going to get to eventually make out with Gwyneth Paltrow.
All right. Respect.
Kudos for the long-term plan.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's good thinking.
You only get that by watching the DVD commentary, by the way.
Happy was one of the better parts of the movie.
Yeah.
He was fun.
I actually really liked the beginning sequence, too. I forgot to mention this, though, but when he's, like, vlogging this entire journey through,
that
like, Civil
so
War.
Cool.
And he's like vlogging the fight. Yeah. And he's like, oh, the guy just grew. I gotta go. Yeah. Like, all that stuff. That was magic for me. I loved
that.
That
was
whole
a really
sequence.
Strong
because that is such a teenager thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, heck, that's an us thing to do. Like, God.
Well, because he went from being a normal kid to literally being with the Avengers, who are fairly public in this universe, you know? So, yeah.
And Happy's like, you can't share this anywhere. You know that, right?
Why are you doing the silly voice?
Yeah.
Just because. Yeah, had that a was very great. Strong opening.
The part with the suit, where like he's got his old suit on, he's like, "Why are you wearing that?" And he gets those big suit reveal. That was cool too. Like there was just a lot in that beginning that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, yeah. There's some good aspects to it. I think that.
Where is this in your first movies ranking? Like for first character movies in the MCU, oh, wow. Like is it better than Doctor Strange for you?
No.
Because those both came out recently.
So here's where this is getting... The more we talk about it, the more I want to put it behind the original Spider-Man. Because I think the original Spider-Man was a better...
I think that Spider-Man 2 and Spider-Man...
Yeah, well, Spider-Man 2 is still... I think Spider-Man 2 is the best.
The villains just top that for me. Like, Willem Dafoe and Alfred Molina cannot be beat. And I want, like, just a...
Michael Keaton is the one to do it.
I know. I just want a beautiful picture of the... three of them, maybe even Thomas Hayden Church in there too, and like,
well, and
they can be my Mount Rushmore of great actors.
Look, I want to make this clear. I think Michael Keaton was great, and I think that his Vulture was definitely top three villain in the MCU.
But you liked Ego too, though. I mean, you didn't.
I liked parts of Ego.
I hated Ego's exposition.
Yeah, that was bad.
Because again, like one of my biggest problems with Guardians 2 was like. The fact that if he just shuts his mouth for 2 seconds,
he wins.
Yeah. But it's the same as in this movie. Whereas if Peter just stayed at home, then nothing would have happened. Right.
But I don't like movies that hit like in Guardians. Well, was
Ego is smart enough to keep his mouth shut.
He's a celestial, you know.
Literally Peter Parker sentence. Is not smart enough to stay at home. He wants to be in the fight too
much. We all
much.
Want to do that. We all
which
want
is
to help
why people. Him rejecting the Avengers slot makes no sense. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a fair comparison because he would have had to have said no to a lot of things versus Ego. Literally, just didn't have to say one sentence
that he gave his.
Other than
I
love you, son.
You know, yes. And it's over. Right, the big difference.
Let's play catch.
But as far as characters go, this is not an actor thing because we all know I love Kurt Russell. But as far as characters go, I would put Vulture in the top three in the MCU.
Who's better than Ego?
They kept him alive too. Like,
yeah, that was a big
which is a good decision. They don't do that a whole lot. So
I wonder if he's in the same prison that Punisher was in. You know.
I mean, it's
it
New York.
Looked
it's possible.
Like the same.
I really wish that they would at least like link Punisher and Spider-Man because in the comic books, their relationship is really cool and their villains are shared.
Especially during Civil War. I love that fan art that just came out recently.
Yeah, me too.
Really
the one
good.
I shared with John Bernthal. Yeah.
He shouldn't be in the same prison though, and here's why. So Fisk is in like a New York prison because he committed crimes in New York.
Yeah.
But Vulture took down an Avengers plane with, like, weapons of mass destruction on it, which you would think would be a federal crime, and he would
but
go...
But it still happened in New York.
I mean, we don't... I mean, I don't...
They crashed on...
I mean, it happened in New York, but like, what I'm saying is he should go to, like, a special prison because he's, like, a terrorist.
Right.
Right, like Arkham. He should go to Arkham.
I mean, maybe...
Because that never ends
that's
poorly.
Not, there's no Arkham in the MCU. You know what I'm trying to say, though? He wasn't just a common criminal by that point in the movie.
You think he should be in Iron Man's C prison that he put Cap
maybe,
and everybody in?
Like,
maybe.
I think maybe that's where you should
really,
be.
Really cool if they had introduced any of the other prisons. There's the Negative Zone, there's the Raft, there's the Cube. Like, they've got some really cool, creepy prisons in the Marvel Universe that...
Where do the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents throw their bad guys?
They have, like, things that negate everybody's powers that they put...
Yeah.
That put
but then where do
like
they go? They don't go...
They have, like, bases that they put people
right.
at. Yeah.
I mean, you would think that he would go with you them.
Think.
Because the truth is that it's the same kind of event.
But most of the people that, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. deals with is, like, Inhumans and actual powered people, whereas this is just a guy with a suit.
I mean, I guess.
So, all right.
But is Whiplash
we're
then
done.
Just in a regular prison somewhere?
Guys, we're done.
He was, I think.
I thought Whiplash is dead.
Well, he is now, but but I mean, when they break him out of prison, I think he was in his normal prison.
Yeah, all right, fine. I guess that's it. We're at our hour mark. Let's do this. Let's wrap this up. Give it a grade.
C+.
Okay.
C.
I'm gonna go with C+ as well. I think that C+ is fair, and
the thing is, like, when I watched the movie, I had a real high afterwards, and I thought, man, this is good. And then I think about it more and more, and I'm like, that's not as good as I thought. It left a bad taste in my mouth the more I thought about it. And that sucks.
After talking about it for an hour, it has now dropped to my third favorite Spider-Man movie. So,
like,
Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man
solid,
Homecoming.
And I'm not even going to deny that I laughed a lot. Some of those jokes were really good. And Francis Daly, who has been in the biz since he was a little kid himself, he's a fantastic writer. So,
one thing we didn't get to touch on that I wanted to mention is I think the movie gets additional hype because of all of the connections to the MCU that it makes.
All right,
it's so not standalone.
This is my PSA. Everybody, you're using Easter egg wrong. You are. A reference to the comic book that's the source material. Hunger Games having Katniss in it, that's not an Easter egg. That's part of the book. That's part of the thing. Like, these people, Betty Brant hosting a show, that's not an Easter egg. That's using an in-universe character. The Sokovia Accords, talking about it in history class, that's a reference to the other movies. It's a connected universe. We do that now. Like, you know what an Easter egg is? Tell them the Star Trek Easter egg. That's an Easter egg.
Yeah, there is a fun Star Trek Easter egg that I never would have caught. But during the churro scene where he's talking about the churro that he was given, there's a guy with a boombox down on the park bench. And it is the same actor who had a boombox in Star Trek for The Voyage Home. And they basically gave him the same credited name. In Star Trek, he's Punk Rocker on Bus. And in Spider-Man Homecoming, he's Punk Rocker on Bench.
That's an Easter egg. A fun homage to something else that shouldn't be in the film.
So no, it does not mean that the MCU and the Star Trek universes are the same universe.
That's not what an Easter egg is, guys. It's something silly that you find.
But obviously Tom Holland is Snoke.
Oh my god.
There was a cool little poster I saw on Reddit this morning where in the movie there's one scene where you can see a poster for the Korean Church of Asgard.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Apparently people are picking it up as a religion in that's the MCU cool. now. So that's not cool. I don't know if that qualifies as an Easter egg under Rachel's
that's
definition,
really cool.
but
it's
it
cool,
is cool.
That's very cool.
It shows universe development in a very subtle way.
My point was just that if you were to strip out the references to all of the other movies, you have very little left in Spider-Man Homecoming.
No, then you have all the references to the Spider-Man comics and, you know, source material and in-universe building is not an Easter egg.
No, I'm not talking about Easter eggs. I'm not talking about Easter eggs. I just meant that most of the other Marvel movies stand on their own. You know, they're good movies by themselves, and if you were to remove the rest of the MCU, there's still a lot of good that happens in them. Even Civil War, right? But when you take out all of the references to the other movies in Homecoming, there's very little left that's substance in the movie.
That's fair.
That's all. I agree. So, but that's going to be it for us. We're giving it a C, a C+, and another C+. Ryan, what do you got for me?
So our Patreon...
That's a thing that
this
we have.
This is a thing that we have where you can give us money so we can do things. So last week I kind of put a challenge out there to our listeners.
2 weeks ago.
So was it 2 weeks? Oh, yeah, because we didn't do it last week. I said that if we got an extra $20 or an extra 4 Patreon subscribers of any amount, then if Derek mentioned at all in the month of August Star Trek, he had to sing lyrics from an ABBA song.
That's true.
And it turns out that we did get that money.
We did.
Thanks to a very generous donator. So that's done. So I decided I think we should add a stretch goal.
Ooh, I love stretch goals.
Yes, I know
it's
you
like
are.
Kickstarter.
As a Kickstarter fan. So Rachel and I talked about this a long time ago. She probably forgot. Kind of like Derek forgot about the ABBA thing. But so Rachel, for the same month of August, if we get an extra... Since $20 was the big one. So, right, just like Kickstarter, we hit the big goal. So if we get an extra $10 or 2 Patreon subscribers for any amount, then Rachel, if she mentions any Disney movie or Disney reference, not like I'm talking pure Disney, not Marvel or Star Wars, because we're a movie podcast, so obviously we're going to reference those, a Disney movie, then she...
What if there's like Aladdin casting news?
Then
she doesn't respond.
I'll take that. Okay.
So... Are you ready to hear the punishment? I feel like he interrupted me right before I said the best part.
I'm sorry.
If she meant the first time she mentions any Disney movie or Disney reference, she has to write for our website a 500-word article on why The Rock is a great actor and his diversity in all his roles. And every time she mentions Disney after that, she has to write another 100 words.
Oh my god!
I like this. I like this. This is good.
So I'm telling you. Rachel has very strong opinions in the opposite end of that about The Rock.
So you want me to lie.
I want her to use her writing abilities.
Play devil's advocate.
Yes, I want you to look at the other side of the coin.
I hate that role.
I want you to look at the other side of the coin.
The coin where he can't act?
Maybe you'll appreciate The Rock.
How dare you?
I just would say don't mention Disney at all in August or you're going to really regret it.
Dwayne Johnson is a national treasure.
I agree.
Oh my God.
But in any
and
case.
And I hope he actually runs for
if
president.
If you want this to happen, right, we just need an extra $10. You don't have to give it to us. Go talk to your friends. Tell them to watch some of the podcasts.
Share the Patreon.
Share the Patreon. Share the page. Do things that could get us a little more attention, and then you're contributing.
You're going to end up reading like a 12,000 word essay.
I really hope that it turns into a book about how The Rock is great, and then we can get it published and have The Rock endorse it and have him as a guest on the podcast. Ultimately, that's my goal, because me and Derek would love that.
Oh my God, it'd be so amazing.
But
I would spend an episode talking to him about his role on Star Trek Voyager.
I would spend an episode talking to him about everything and why I love him as an actor.
You guys
actor.
Are going to end up scheduling like a Disney podcast.
That's true. I mean, maybe there's a Disney podcast.
There's going to be some huge Aladdin news and it's going to be very controversial.
Yeah. In any case, this would be great. Guys. Right. So, and this is all in fun. So yes. Rachel is okay with this. Derek is not mad about the ABBA thing. So, and there will be a stretch goal if we hit that for me. So I'll let Derek and Rachel pick that.
Oh, so, we will.
But we had to get to that. You have to get through Rachel first. So yes. we have
ten
to
more dollars.
$10 is not a lot. No. Or two friends to give us a dollar. That's okay too. You know, whatever you need to do. We prefer not fake accounts so that you don't have to give $10 to give us $2.
Yeah,
I realize that's a loophole, but you know, we trust our listeners and we just want to do some fun stuff for you guys. So please contribute here patreon.com/heroespodcasts. Multiple S's in that. Plural.
It's a plural.
It's a plural.
Well, there's one S at the end. But,
okay. Yes.
Heroes Podcasts. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and heroespodcast.com. We're on Instagram, all that good stuff. And you can follow us on Twitch. We record live every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, twitch.tv/heroespodcast. And you can chat with us. I've been chatting with a couple of people tonight. So thank you for those who joined us live. And this week, actually, on Gamer Heroes, we're going to be talking about the new Castlevania show on Netflix, which is a little bit of Screen Heroes territory, but it's a video game show. It's a video game show. So we're talking about it on Gamer Heroes. So check that out on Friday. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.